Good afternoon, young sir.
Hi, mate.
Not that I'm making any sort of connection there at all.
I hope not.
How are you? Seems like an age since I saw you last, I must say.
Yeah, it's probably about 6 weeks, I think. But anyway, you're looking bright and cheerful back
I do feel, I must admit, I do feel as though it's been good having a little bit of a break. I feel all bright and breezy and so on.
Good.
Probably very annoyingly so, I'm sure. Anyway, I've got with me our legal eagle, Ian Tyse. He normally comes in and talks legal matters, but Ian is one of those very privileged people to have managed to be able to conspire to retire early, which is great, I'm sure. And that's what we're going to talk about. Not retiring early, but just retiring in general. So let's just kick off, Ian, by talking about the fact that, of course, years ago, 65, that was it. You got to 65, end of the show. And indeed, with women, of course, it was 60. Things have changed quite a bit on that. That's an arguable point, of course, about the whole pensions business and women now being pushed out to the same time of life as men. But increasingly, a lot of people are deciding that actually come 65 or 66 in some cases now, I think, they just want to carry on, don't they?
Yeah, I think the beauty of what's changed is that there is a choice now. You know, you go back 30 years and or 40 years when the retirement age was fixed at 65 for men, 60 for women. It was said at that point because that's when the government decided it was going to pay what was called the state retirement pension based on the number of years you'd worked. And at that time, life expectancy wasn't much more. So for men, life expectancy might have been 67, 68, and for women, maybe early 70s. So men would only have 1 or 2 years of retirement. Women might have 10 years. And clearly, over the last 30 or 40 years, life expectancy has jumped, and the retirement age had stayed stationary. And so you got to a situation where people were now typically having 20 years of retirement before they died. And so the government has decided to increase the retirement age for the date at which you can receive the state retirement pension. But what's more important is they've scrapped the compulsory retirement age, which used to apply to everybody, whether you were collecting a state retirement pension or not. Now, what used to happen was that an employer would simply kick you out on your 65th birthday. They had the legal right to do so, whether you were competent or not competent, whether you were fully able to do your job or not. It didn't matter. There was a compulsory retirement age. Now, that's been challenged in the courts successfully, and so the government had to get rid of it. And so the situation is now that it's open to employers to choose when the retirement age is, and it's open to employees to choose whether to carry on working or not. And that brings up the issue of how you live, basically. Have you got enough money for retirement when you lose your main income, or if you're relying on state handouts? And the Labour government, I think it was, introduced pension credit, and they set the rate, minimum income guarantee, at around £140 a week, which was a lot higher than the state retirement pension when they introduced it. And that made, well, that was somewhat surprising, because that meant even if you'd worked all your life and had a full state pension, you would still be eligible for a top-up, because the state pension was £110 a week. And therefore, you were going to get at least £30 a week from the government, assuming you had no savings. And if you had a private pension, you'd lose your private pension pound for pound. So anyway, the Conservatives changed that a couple of years ago, such that the state pension was increased to £140 a week, the same, £145, the same as the pension credit guarantee. So if you have a private pension, that money would now be on top of the state pension, so you will have some benefit from saving for your retirement. Nevertheless, the government also changed the rules so that you are, in fact, able to cash in your private pension after the age of 55, although there may be a penalty or charges on a private pension for doing so. But at least it meant that legally you could get your money out sooner, which means, effectively, some people are able to retire from 55. On the other hand, if you want to or are able to, or if your employer allows you to carry on working after 65 and you delay taking your state retirement pension, the government will give you a 5% annual increase for every complete year that you delay taking your state retirement pension. And so there's an incentive for retiring later. The government saves the money and you get part of the increase paid when you do actually take your SRP.
I guess there's an argument to say that staying in some sort of role where you are occupied, whether it be sort of bringing in some income or just doing voluntary work after your state retirement age, is a good thing, because so often you used to hear in the past about people who would retire and then two, three years later, you know, they'd fallen off the perch, so to speak. And often the reason for that was due to factors to do with the fact that they'd given up work, whether it be that they were not fully occupied and felt lonely or whatever it was. So, you know, there is an argument, I would say, for people to carry on simply just so that they feel engaged in life, I guess.
Yeah, and you touch on a very important point, and it's certainly true that there were people who maybe were doing 50, 60 hours a week and then stopped suddenly, and within a year or two, they keeled over and died. And obviously, there's no one size fits all, and therefore you've got to look at the options based on your own situation if you're approaching this time of life. And I think, obviously, having good health is key, because clearly that limits what you're able to do if you don't. And that's also financial health, because, again, that limits what you can do. But you've got to look at your family. If you have family who are living with you, then, again, it may be that they would like to spend more time with you. And ultimately, it's about a work-life balance and what works for you. And some people really enjoy working. I do. I really enjoy helping people. But you get to this point at approaching retirement where you have a choice, and you can either stop doing things for other people and do things entirely for yourself. That is, you can say, right, that's it. I'm going to go on holidays, go on cruises. I'm going to sign up for learning a new language, whatever. These are things which are entirely for you, focused on you and your needs, or maybe your family and so on. You can stay at home, watch TV, play computer games. Or, as I chose to do, is to carry on helping people by volunteering with local charities, which we'll talk about in a moment, by continuing to provide some free or low-cost legal advice to people in a limited way so that I keep my head active and brain active, because I like to do that as well. And having a range of things to do, but making the work-life balance such that I'm not overstressed, I'm doing enough to keep myself busy, I have something to do every day, so I've got a reason to get up in the morning and go out and enjoy this lovely weather we're having today. And that's, you know, including coming here on the radio to talk to you and the listeners in Cambridge. And it's all part of trying to have something in the diary every day so that there is some reason for getting up in the morning. But for me, that means not just doing things to make me feel better, but to try and help others feel better too.
So when you retired, because you've been retired roughly how long now?
Well, again, you see, this is an interesting point as to what is retirement.
Indeed, yes. But when did you officially stop working in gainful employment? Then let me put it that way.
Well, I could stretch the hairs, but
Split the hairs, stretch the words.
Yeah. I mean. But I stopped working for someone else.
Yes.
Ceased to be a solicitor about 3 years ago.
Okay, so you were in your mid-50s, kind of when you stopped, as I say, working in gainful employment. When you got to that point, and presumably, closed the door on the office for the last time, what did you find in terms of thinking, okay, so what's the future hold for me? Did you find it easy or difficult to find things to do?
Because I'd planned it to some extent, and there was a 2 or 3 month period when I had to wait for the Solicitors Regulation Authority to take me off the register, and I couldn't do anything legal at all during that period. And so I did an online course to teach English as a foreign language for a couple of months. So that was something to fill in that gap. But it gave me time, those few months, to fill in. But I've been planning for it for some time, because I've been working part-time anyway for a long time, and I'm effectively self-employed.
And was there lots of places that you could go to talk to people to say, you know, what's available, what can I do to occupy my time?
I wouldn't say there's lots of places. I mean, I wanted to volunteer, but I didn't know who for. And there's, in the centre of Cambridge, there's the Council for Voluntary Service on Regent Street and Andrew Street, whichever is next to the Mandela House. They have had an office there, and they advertise a lot of charities in Cambridge. They have all kinds of information about what's available and useful websites where you can go on and see what what charities are looking for and do some searching and find something that sounds interesting. And so that's what I did. And there were two things that came out of that which sounded interesting. And I contacted those two charities, Dial-A-Ride and Campsite, and they were both happy to talk to me. And subsequently, I got involved with both charities. And the reasons for choosing those, particularly out of others, things that appealed to me. Firstly, with Campsite, who deal with visually impaired people, and they're just over 100 years old, based in Chesterton. It was a feeling that what if the worst happened to me, what would I do? And losing my sight would be one of the most serious things I could think of. And so I was thinking, well, if I help a charity that's dealing with visually impaired people, then if it have ever happened to me, they'd be there to help me. And it was, you know, like, this is the most serious thing, so there must be other people who need help. I don't know what way. So I went along to Campsite and said, hi, I'm Ian, you know, do you need any help? And we went through, they did some training to deal with how you guide visually impaired people. And then one of the things that sounded interesting was riding a tandem, because I love cycling and I'd never been on a tandem. And they said, well, how would you like to go on a tandem with visually impaired people? And the Campsite own some tandems, and
this is presumably to give visually impaired people the experience of riding a bike, I guess, is it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And it may be before they became visually impaired, they really like cycling.
Okay.
Obviously,
yeah.
They can't safely go out on their own, and therefore, going out with a sighted person on the front, they get the experience of cycling, the exercise, the feeling of maybe, you know, the atmosphere, the smells of the countryside, and conversation as we chat all the way. And it was an eye-opener for me, expression. And I find it's actually more fun than cycling normally, because you're cycling, you're covering distance, you're exercising, but you don't notice it. You don't notice the exercise because you're chatting. And you have really, obviously it depends who you get, but I've got some really nice passengers. And you just chat for an hour, hour and a half, and you cover, you know, 20 miles, and you don't realise you've covered the distance. And it's great. And, you know, we usually cycle out in the countryside, have coffee or have lunch somewhere, and then cycle back. And it's a great way of enjoying cycling, helping somebody who's visually impaired, and supporting Campsite. So.
And something like that, is that something, because one of the issues that I think people who are perhaps coming up to the point where they may be thinking about doing something like that might well be, am I going to go from working 5 days a week in, as I said before, gainful employment, to working 5 days a week, you know, as a volunteer? So is it like that, or is it very flexible? Can you work as often or as little as you wish? How's it?
Oh, it's entirely flexible. There's no real contract. Because there's no money changing hands, there's no contract. And therefore, you can't be forced to work if you don't want to. And therefore, you can choose how much you do. And with tandem riding, for example, a Campsite, it's once or twice a week. It's subject to the weather and so on. With Dial-A-Ride, as a volunteer driver for minibuses, disabled people.
So that's like, it's kind of like a mini bus taking people around the city and stuff like that, is it?
Yeah. It is, yeah. And anybody who can't use conventional transport for whatever reason can become a member of Dial-A-Ride for £10 a year and then get trips around the city. Typically, they're £6 return. And, you know, it's 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, we take people.
And is that like door to door? So do you ring up Dial-A-Ride and they come collect you from home and stuff?
Yeah, it's not like a taxi service in that you ring up and they come straight away. It's all about advance booking. So you may have a doctor's appointment in 2 weeks' time, so you'd ring up and then you say when you need to be where you need to be, and then Dial-A-Ride will work out, along with all the other trips, how to get a minibus to collect you such that you get to your destination on time. And so it's right, driving all over the city and collecting people, taking them to day centres. Some people want to go shopping at the big supermarkets, so maybe there's a group of people. In the summer particularly, there's trips to the seaside or to other events. They book the minibus for the day and the driver gets a free lunch sometimes, if they're, and we get a trip out to the countryside or to somewhere in the country or the seaside, it depends where they want to go. And, you know, maybe somebody, the in a particular care home or something.
Would you say that both of those things that you've talked about there, quite clearly the cycle riding in particular, I think, would that favour somebody who's perhaps not, reached 65 maybe, do you think? Or is that not an issue?
Age isn't the factor, it's health.
Right.
And ability to control a tandem and be fit enough to ride. So, you know, you could be 90, 95 and able to do that, and you could be 50 and not able to do it. So it's about physical ability for tandem riding. But campsite do a whole host of other things in supporting visually impaired people. And there's something for everyone, from befriending to, you know, simply talking to people, or just collecting them, taking them to some of the social groups that campsite organise. There's a whole range. And once you're on their volunteer mailing list, anytime a visually impaired person needs you, they just circulate an email and you can reply to it.
Just one more question I wanted to ask you, Ian, which is, we've talked about some of the things that you found to occupy your time once you had retired, but of course you did spend time as a solicitor before that, and many, many people have got a very, very valuable skill that they've probably spent years and years and years working at before retirement. Surely there must be an opportunity to pass on some of that knowledge to others once you have retired.
Yeah, absolutely, if you want to, and this is a choice. And yes, it is a shame to lose all that experience and knowledge and just wash it all away. It would be great to be able to pass it on to other people. And there's a number of ways you can do that. Firstly, you can mentor somebody younger than you, somebody who's up and coming or training. You can take them under your wing and be there for advice or phone calls or the occasional discussion. Secondly, you can volunteer for a charity that does things in the same field as you, and then you can offer your services through the charity to that to people that approach the charity for help. Or thirdly, you can do what I did to some extent, is once you stop being a solicitor, for example, you come off the roll, you become unregulated. And being unregulated means you can offer legal advice much more freely than you can as a solicitor. The insurance is much lower, the controls and so on are much lower, as long as you're careful. And you can therefore charge much less or do things for free for people who have legal advice problems and difficulties. That's, you know, coming on the radio here and offering legal advice to people in Cambridge is one way. And occasionally, I mean, I don't advertise, but people know me and come to me for advice and assistance. And if, you know, I give free one-off advice to people and help that way if I can. If it's an ongoing case, I might make a small charge for doing so. But that way, I can carry on keeping my skills fresh and being useful, but in a controlled way. Because as a non-solicitor, I don't have to take on everyone that approaches me. I can be choosy amongst the cases and say, no, I think you can go to a proper solicitor for that. And I'll only get involved if there's something special about the case that needs my particular help.
I would have thought also places like sixth form colleges, like Long Road, for example, would be interested. Again, perhaps having experienced people come in, talk to their students about, life as a solicitor, for example, or possibly even going into schools and just talking to, groups of school kids about careers, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if the people in the careers department at any of the colleges want advice or information from somebody who's had a lifetime working in a particular field, then certainly worth approaching them and asking. Yeah, and that certainly can be very interesting. And as I say, it's about passing on your experience if you can, if you want to. Not everyone likes public speaking, and being surrounded by a bunch of school children can be quite daunting. I think talking to school children is a lot more challenging than talking to adults, because obviously adults want to be there and the school children perhaps are required to be there, shall we say.
Yes.
And there are sixth form colleges or other community centres which put on adult education and adult learning, and it may be your skills can be used in a way through a course, and you can pass on through some kind of organised training. And that's partly why I decided to do the Teaching English as a Foreign Language certificate, so that if I needed to, it's something else I can do when I'm overseas. Perhaps I can teach people English English, maybe. It's one of the reasons I like going to China, for example, is they have a great demand, a great thirst to learn the English language. And because I have a TEFL certificate, I'm able to offer that in a more structured way. And that may be a new possibility. You know, you can go, anyone with a good English voice, natural English accent, can teach English to foreigners, and you can travel around the world and do that. And that's another way of enjoying active retirement.
Oh, I like the sound of that, I must say. Ian, as always, great to talk to you. Thanks very much for coming in. Very interesting. I'm sure if our listeners were to contact the council, there are probably people within County Hall that are there with the job of possibly distributing information about volunteer organisations. I know that's true. I live in Essex, and I know that's true of the local council that we have in North Essex that do offer that. So I'm sure it must be true also. Okay. Maybe we'll ask them and see. If you have information about any organisations that you'd like to promote to get people who have retired involved in, by all means, send it to Cambridge 105 and we'll put it up on our community desk information. Ian, as I say, thanks ever so much. Next month, we'll be back to legal matters, I've no doubt. All right. Cheers for now.